In ko pridem jaz nazaj, je pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna eno žvo.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv. Siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črn pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiju Študent.
Poletne dni gotovo zaznamuje nijansa spremembe. Zrak je suh, vreme lepo, narava je na svojem vrhuncu zrelosti in tako si radi poiščemo dobro družbo, s katero bi lahko preživljali lahke večere pod milim nebom, objeti v izpolnjujoče občutke stimulativnega kramljanja in še česa, bolj močnega in čutnega. Tudi teme, ki se obravnavajo znotraj aktualno politične redakcije, se spremenijo. Včasih pretežke teme iz notranje in zunanje politične situacije se umaknejo takim, ki so morda bolj življenjske, saj so povezane z naravo in s človekom, ki je lahko včasih z njo v tesnem direktnem odnosu. V skladu s povedanim smo vam tokrat pripravili Zeitgeist, v katerem bomo pokramljali z 28-letnim ameriškim popotnikom, ki se trenutno nahaja v Sloveniji. Njegovo ime je William Blumstead, ena od njegovih bolj izraženih strasti pa so čebele. William je sicer geograf, pisatelj tako leposlovja kot znanstvenih člankov za American Bee Journal. Mi pa smo prisluhnili predvsem njegovi zgodbi in znanju v vlogi čebelarja. Za začetek smo Williama poprosili, da nam razloži, kako je sploh prišel v kontakt s čebelami. Pogovor je potekal v angleškem jeziku.
I first got involved in bees in New Zealand when I was traveling. I took a year off from university because I wasn't interested in taking classes, and I did 1 year and it wasn't interesting, and I was wasting money just being there, so I decided I would take a year off from school. And I worked and traveled around the world. I worked in Montana with grizzly bears. And then I went to Ireland and worked at a sailing school in Ireland. And then I went to New Zealand, where I wanted to just work on farms and travel. And I was walking down the street one day and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with myself. And I saw a sign that said honey for sale. And something clicked inside me and I said, I want to learn about honeybees. So I walked inside and got the name of a local beekeeper who was selling honey. And I called him, and 2 days later I started living in his trailer and helped him for a month, and he taught me about bees, the biology and honey production. He was an organic beekeeper. It's very small, a couple hundred hives. And he did Manuka honey, which is a honey only found in New Zealand. And it was just delicious, and I liked being outside. I liked eating honey. I liked how interesting the bees were. And so I worked for him for a month, and then another beekeeper in the area for a month, just woofing, so not even getting paid. I was just getting a place to stay and food for working every morning. And then after that, I returned to university, decided it was a good idea to get a degree. And then when I finished, I sort of took stock of all the things I'd done and which I wanted to continue with, and beekeeping really stuck out of all of them, because I was doing conservation work, and anything human and animal related was my interest. But I thought bees and beekeeping was one of the most interesting relationships we have with animals, and I like farming as well. So I found a job with a guy in Texas, and he moved me down there, and I worked there for a year and a half.
Williamovo popotovanje po poteh čebelarstva se v Teksasu seveda ni zaključilo. Obiskal je številne države, med njimi Argentino, Čile, Kitajsko, Avstralijo in tudi Slovenijo. Pravi pa, da se bo v bližnji prihodnosti najverjetneje odpravil v smer Ukrajine. Vseeno smo ga poprosili, da z nami najprej deli izkušnjo dela s čebelami v njegovi rodni državi, v Združenih državah Amerike.
So in US beekeeping is very industrialized because it's just the way the beekeeping industry has grown and monoculture farms in America. And so beekeepers have to be very big to survive. They need a couple thousand usually, and they have to hire other people like myself or a lot of migrant workers to come and work for their hives. And so it's also very migratory. And so beekeepers, the major beekeepers will start in the south. They'll have a base in the southern US for the winter in Texas or Georgia or Arizona. And the bees overwinter there because the winters are easier. And then in February, they move their bees migratory to almonds in California, Southern California, because I think Southern California grows 90% of the world's almonds or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the fields of almonds are so big, just massive, thousands of acres, that they need to bring in bees to pollinate the almonds or else the crop won't be as good.
Since there are no natural pollinators
In the area, it's just one big field of almonds. There's nothing else they can survive on. So they've created this industry, a pollination rental industry, where the almond growers pay beekeepers $150 a hive to come and put their bees there for 3 weeks or whenever the blooming period is. And this is how American beekeepers survive these days, is the honey, just making honey. They can't make ends meet. It's the honey prices are too low and the gas prices are too high and other costs are too high. So this almond pollination is keeping beekeepers afloat. And so they come, most beekeepers move their bees to California in February for 3 weeks. And then after that's done, the bees can't survive there anymore. There's no other food. So they have to move. They move the bees. They put them on big semi-trailers, 400 bees, 400 beehives on the back of a semi-trailer, and then they drive them up north to Oregon or Washington, where there are apple pollination or peach pollination. And then once that's done in the spring, they move them to North Dakota or Montana, where they make honey for the summer. There's huge fields of alfalfa and clover there. And then once that's done, they move them back down south in October or so to their wintering area, and then they wait. And so this is just one pattern throughout the U.S. There's many others on the East Coast. Beekeepers head up that way, but in general, they're in south in the winter, and then they move north in the summer. And it's highly stressful on the bees to move them around so much, and it's maybe part of the cause of colony collapse disorder that they're still trying to investigate, but it's just a much different way of beekeeping, big mm-hmm. industrial.
William je omenil sindrom kolapsa čebelje družine, ki od leta 2006 pesti čebelarje po svetu. Vzrok za njegov pojav pa še danes ni popolnoma znan. Prizadete čebele se s poletov niso vračale nazaj v domači pan, močno pa je narasla tudi njihova smrtnost. William razloži podrobneje, kaj bi lahko bil vzrok za pojav sindroma.
Colony collapse disorder, which has been happening for the past 6 years or so, I think 2006 is when it started, it's still uncertain what the causes are. There's a lot of people trying to figure out why the bees have just been disappearing. But there have been no good answers yet. But some of the theories are pesticides, stress on the bees, the chemicals that we use inside the hives to miticides, to kill mites, and antibiotics, and the movement of the bees, stressing them out. And the best theories say it's the combination of all these It's not, there's no one thing that's causing it to happen. So, and that's really hard to study, the synergistic effects on all these factors, and so that's why the answer's been evading us. But a lot of people want to blame pesticides, especially these neonicotinoid pesticides, which have just been banned here in Europe, or at least partially banned. But there's a lot of, that's a very confusing and controversial topic that there's a lot of science, and a lot of people are very, very emotional about this, I guess, about saving the bees, but there's a lot of science that says it's not pesticides solely. And so, Europe has just banned them. The U.S. is, I guess, Europe has more of a cautionary principle that these pesticides may be harming the bees, so they ban it, while the U.S. is more, they need full proof for it to, yeah.
But this disappearance of bees probably influenced the economy, which is leaning on bees.
Yeah.
So this must be a big question still now.
It is, yeah. It is, especially this winter in U.S. was very bad. I don't think it was as bad here in Europe, but in the U.S. it was, I think, 40% of bees died this year, which is the most of any year in recent history. And so there's still a lot of question, and that caused pollination rentals to go up massively. It was $150, and I think this year is sometimes over $200, and so that's going to raise the price of food as well, in the long run.
V Združenih državah Amerike pa se soočajo s še enim pojavom, in sicer je uvoženo evropsko čebelo, ki so jo Američani uporabljali za opraševanje, pričela nadomeščati afrikanizirana čebela, znana tudi kot morilska.
So the killer bee is an africanized bee. The bees from Eastern Africa are much more aggressive, and so they've earned the name killer bee. Because they've evolved with predators for many millennia, from humans to honey badgers to anything, and so they've become much more defensive, and they're much more defensive, and so and they also aren't honey, they don't store honey because they're a tropical bee, so they make honey in a certain area, but then when the honey stops, they abscond or they migrate somewhere else. So they don't store honey, and they don't make a permanent home. And so a Brazilian researcher in the 60s decided he wanted to study these bees, and he brought them to Brazil. And during one experiment, they escaped. And they're very competitive bee, and so they've spread throughout the landscape, crossbreeding with the European honeybee, which was already in Brazil. And over 50 years, it took them 50 years to go from Brazil all the way to Southern America. And they can only get to the southern part of America because once it got cold, they couldn't get any further north because they don't store honey. And they've created a sort of crossbreed between the European bee and the Africanized bee, which is much more aggressive. But it also, the Africanized bee is much better for the varroa mites and other diseases, and the varroa mite is the worst pest in beekeeping history right now. It's what's thought also to be the part of the cause of colony collapse disorder, because the varroa mite weakens the bee, and it also the beekeepers have to use chemicals or other acids inside the hive to try to kill the varroa mites, because without treatment, most bees die within 1 or 2 years. But the Africanized bee is more resistant to the varroa mites, and so this crossbreed has been a blessing in that way, in that a lot of beekeepers don't have to use chemicals, even if the hives are more defensive. They make a more permanent home. They gather honey, and so they'll stay in their home rather than if there's a they don't swarm as much, I guess.
Williama smo povprašali po izkušnji pri delu s polmorilskimi čebelami.
It was a painful experience. I went down to Texas. I started beekeeping in New Zealand, and the bees there were very nice, and it was very pleasant working. But then when I went to Texas, the bees there are very aggressive because they've crossbred with the Africanized bee. And so my first day, I was wearing the suit and the mask and the gloves, but I had on just short ankled boots. And my first day, I got stung probably 30 times in the ankles, and I couldn't walk the next day. I climbed out of bed and collapsed on the floor.
So this means they stung you everywhere?
Yeah.
Search for the animal.
No, they. Well, I got stung other places too, but just my ankles were exposed, and I couldn't tuck because my boots were short. I couldn't tuck my trousers in the boots, and eventually I got duct tape and taped it around so I was secure, but I'd already gotten stung so many times. And they're just really aggressive. They come at you hard and fast, and they find any sort of weakness you have, any sort of hole in the armor, or if the cloth is just tight against your skin, they can still get through the suits, and they just sting a lot more.
But this accident in the 60s, which got quite a lot of attention in the media and got this nickname Killer Bee, and was very negatively portrayed for quite a while, is now actually turning out to be, with this current affair with the European bee in the States, an opportunity for the beekeeping to go on and for bees to stay healthier.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to use as many chemicals, especially in Brazil. Like, it's been a really blessing for Brazil, I guess, and tropical places. Less so for like winter places like America, North America. But Brazil, like the European honeybee wasn't doing very well in Brazil because it's not a tropical bee. It's In the tropics, there's honey flow for a few weeks, and then it stops, and then honey flows somewhere else. And the European bee couldn't handle that very well. But the African, most of Brazil, parts of Brazil are a lot like the bee's natural habitat, the Africanized bee's natural habitat in Africa. And so it did really well there, and the beekeepers there don't have to use chemicals. And so it was a real benefit to them, and they're happy about it now.
Iz Teksasa smo se tako preselili v čebelarsko situacijo v Braziliji, ki jo William Blumstead opiše takole.
I'm not sure if they have a pollination rental like they do in the States, but most of the honey, Brazil can produce lots and lots of organic honey, which is one of their best things, because they have this Africanized bee, so they don't have to use chemicals. And they also have, in the north, there's this huge regions which are, there can't be any agriculture there, and to make organic honey you need to be a certain distance away from agriculture, standard agriculture, because there's not allowed to be pesticides. And so northern Brazil has huge tracts of land where there's no agriculture, and then they don't have to use pesticides, or they don't have to use miticides, and so they're able to make lots and lots of organic honey. In the south, that's where more of the industrial agriculture is in Brazil, and there's some beekeeping down there, but not as they're, I think, suffering the same problems.
Gotovo je evidentno, da ima William Blumstead kljub svoji relativni mladosti ogromno izkušenj s čebelarjenjem. Kljub vsemu pa se je pri delu s čebelami že specializiral, in sicer za vzrejo čebeljih kraljic oziroma matic. Kako to poteka?
So I'm my specialty is breeding and rearing queen bees, which so farmers, beekeepers buy queen bees. Sort of like how farmers buy seed. Farmers could make their own seed if they wanted to, but it's cheaper for them, and it requires less time and skill if they just buy queens from us. And so the beekeepers I've worked for just raise queen bees and sell them. So when a queen dies, or
it swarms, the bees try to raise a new queen. If there's no queen in the hive, the bees immediately try to raise a new queen. They don't have, there's no more queen pheromone, so it's their natural habit to raise a new queen, and they try to raise as many as possible. It can be, you know, 10, 12, 20. They just take eggs and they start feeding them royal jelly, and after 10 days, 10 or 11 days, the queens will hatch. And the first one to hatch starts attacking the other queen cells, and so only one will survive, and they fight to the death right first thing when they come out of their cells. And then that queen, the one that survives, will go on a mating flight in a few days, and she'll mate with the drones in the area. Then she'll come back and she'll start laying eggs, and she's the new queen. And so what we do is we trick a hive into thinking it doesn't have a queen by separating. If a hive is two stories high, we put a metal sheet in between the two stories so the bees in the top box don't think they don't have a queen. There's no pheromone up there. And then we take eggs from a hive that we want to breed from, so one of our best hives. We graft eggs from that hive into queen cell cups, and we'll put maybe 50 cells in a hive, and the bees think they don't have a queen, so they start trying to raise those cells, raise those eggs into queens. And after 10 days, right when they're about to hatch, we take them out of the hive, and then we put them in smaller hives, and there they'll smaller queenless hives, and there they'll hatch, and they'll go on their mating flights, and they'll come back, and then we catch them and put them in a little cage. And we sell them each for any $20 is about the price of the going price of a queen.
Ker William pogosto razkrije, da se na čebele da gledati tudi zgolj ekonomskega vidika, smo se malce obregnili tudi ob to, pojasnil je.
The number of beehives really, at least in America, the number of beehives, like, people have been concerned about colony collapse disorder, but the number of beehives, managed beehives, is more of an economic issue rather than natural. It's not about habitats, like you know, how many bees can survive in this area for how many flowers there are. Because beekeepers in America feed sugar syrup a lot to their honeybees to keep them alive, and so it's more of an economic issue. How many beehives there are? It's strange industrial agriculture effect.
Odnos, ki ga kažejo domači čebelarji, se vsaj na videz zdi povsem drugačen. Čebela je v Sloveniji predstavljena kot svetinja, kot blaginja za naravo in posledično tudi za človeka, o kateri se v povezavi z denarjem le redko govori na glas. William je v Sloveniji že tretjič in tako pokomentira, kako doživlja čebelarstvo pri nas.
Like I was describing, the U.S. is very industrial. People have thousands of hives. They have to hire workers to work with them, and it's very economically minded industry. I mean, it's money making, and the bees are just sort of means to that end. But here, the beekeeping is much smaller scale. There are some professional beekeepers here that's their only job. But it seems like most beekeepers have a dozen or a few dozen hives, and it's much smaller industry, and it's not probably maybe not their main source of income, but a side income, and so it just means that more care and more respect has been given to bees, and it's just been a part of your culture here for a long time. Just the small scale farm that's been the tradition here. Just bees have been a part of it, and so bees are just much more respected here, and you can see that in the way of life and the way they treat bees, and like the painted front boards, and just the respect.
William Blumstead nadaljuje s slovenskimi izkušnjami in razloži, kaj ga je prvič prineslo v Slovenijo.
So the first, I came here in 2010, fall of 2010, on a scholarship, a Fulbright scholarship from the US. And I wanted to study the phenology of flowering plants here in Slovenia. And phenology is the study of cycles, natural cycles, like migration and bloom and spotting. This is the first time I saw this bird this year. This is there are a lot of volunteer networks of people reporting natural cycles, and people study this to see how climate change is happening. My study was to look at the when plants were flowering over the past 100 years, because if you put a beehive on a scale, and weigh it every day, you can see what's beekeepers do this to look at what's happening inside the hive, and so they can see if their hives are hungry or if they're full. And so if you look at the graph of a weight, beehive weight over the year, you can see in the winter they're slowly eating their food, and then at some point in the spring the weight spikes, it jumps up, and that's when there's nectar in flowers, because bees are out bringing home nectar, and so the hive gets much heavier. And this record can, if it's kept for many years, you can look at when the flowers are blooming differently. You can see that the flowers are blooming earlier or later. And I wanted to see, and Slovenian beekeepers have been keeping these records for 100 years, and I wanted to see how the flower bloom was changing. A similar study has been going on in the U.S. A NASA scientist this has been one of his side projects, but he's shown since 1970, the flowers around Washington, D.C. were blooming in mid-March, but today the flowers are blooming in late February. So there's been, I think, 3 weeks change in the past 40 years or something like that. It's on average, it's like a half a day each year that the flowers have been gradually getting earlier and earlier. And so I wanted to see if something similar was happening here.
But you didn't get the chance.
I didn't get the chance because of the first 50 years of this data from 1910 to 1960, where it was in the Slovenian beekeeping journal, and so that was easy to get at the Beekeepers Association. But then after that, they stopped publishing these results, and they have them somewhere. But due to some politics or controversy that I'm still unsure about, I was never able to get the latter half of this research. So I found some, I was interested in what I was looking at for the first 50 years, and it looked promising, but then I was never able to get the second half, and that's the really important part for climate change, is after 1960 is when we started noticing all these things.
What was your research?
Just a second, you're still attempting to be provided this data.
I haven't been attempting, but I maybe I'll ask some questions here while I'm here.
Okay. Do that.
I will, because it's I'm going back to school in Edinburgh this September, and maybe we'll continue this research.
All right.
Was your research focused on a specific kind of plants, or plants in general?
No, just plants in general. It was looking, I hadn't got to the point where, because there are these observation stations, they're called, and they happen, they're all over Slovenia, Ljubljana, Maribor, Novo Mesto, and so each one would be a different kind of plant, and I would look at them individually, but I didn't get to that point.
Za konec našega pogovora smo ameriškega sogovornika poprosili še, naj nas seznani s še kakšnimi pomembnejšimi raziskavami, ki na področju čebelarstva potekajo v tem trenutku.
There's a lot of bee research going on varroa mites, which is a really terrible pest, and RNA interference, it's called RNAi. It's complicated genetics, which I don't understand, but it's sort of interfering with how the varroa knows when it's time to lay eggs. And so they're trying to come at it that way, and it would be really great if they could come up with that solution.
So this is the genetic engineering.
Yeah, genetic engineering of these mites to just prevent it from knowing when to lay eggs, and that would be a way to stop varroa. And that's really the concern. That's the major concern in all of beekeeping, is how to prevent varroa, because it's just like this tick that lives on bees, and it sucks their hemolymph, and it weakens them, and it's also a vector for other diseases. And so they think it's one of the major players in colony collapses. Research has come out recently in Croatia. There's news about researchers in Croatia using bees for detecting landmines, which is an interesting prospect. They get the bees accustomed to this explosive to explosives by adding it to sugar syrup, and then the bees associate that with food, and somehow the bees can then detect landmines in an area.
Zadnjo raziskavo, to je z uporabo čebel pri razminiranju področji, ki jo omenja William Blumstead, smo bili v aktualno političnem uredništvu seznanjeni že prej in tako v Zeitgeist vključujemo izjavo, ki smo jo z vodjo projekta, profesorjem Nikolo Kezičem, posneli pred časom in ki bo morda natančneje pojasnila, kako je mogoče čebele uporabiti v ta namen.
Pa ono što smo mi dokazali da pčele možemo dobiti, da one traže i taj miris, znači da traže hranu u području gdje se nalazi miris. Mi to radimo u okviru našeg Hrvatskog centra za razminiranje, centra za testiranje obuku, to je CTRO, gdje dobivamo puno potporu unutar toga. Osnovna namjena ove dresure pčela i nagovaranje pčela da traže eksploziv nije da otkrivamo mine, jer tamo gdje se mine nalaze više od 10 godina, tamo je visoko raslinje. I mi kad pčele uđu u to raslinje, mi nismo u mogućnosti njih pratiti u dubinu šume. Ova ideja sa ovim pčelama je da povećamo sigurnost, jer je činjenica da nakon kad se strojevima razminira neko područje, nakon toga netko mora preuzeti to područje i dokazati da su sve mine na tom području razminirane. Do sada se koriste određene metode kojima se dokazuje da na tom prostoru nije preostala nijedna mina, ali se one, to su te standardne tri metode. Mi želimo sa ovim pčelama dodati još jednu metodu, znači sa jednom metodom gdje mi možemo odjedan puta pokriti čitavu razminiranu površinu i time snimiti stanje i postaviti sumnju da se možda na nekom od tih dijelova nalazi neka mina koja se onda treba provjeriti. Moj zadatak u projektu, europskom projektu je Tiramisu, je da izradim protokol za i dokažem to i da izvršimo testiranje na testnim minskim poljima. Nakon toga, prije nego što uđe u širu primjenu, znači onda se za tu metodu mora izraditi procedura, znači valorizacija i verifikacija metode, i tek onda kada se ona dokaže kroz valorizaciju i verifikaciju, ali to je procedura koju su sve metode prošle, ali to je onda procedura koja će se kasnije napraviti nakon završenog projekta.
In tako zaključujemo Zeitgeist, v katerem smo se prek pogovora z ameriškim čebeljarjem Williamom Blumsteadom seznanjali o čebelji realnosti po svetu. Seveda pa je o njih mogoče povedati še marsikaj, ali kot je dejal naš sogovornik, bi sam o njih lahko govoril cel dan. In morda tudi bo, če ga poiščete kje na ljubljanskih ulicah, dokler zopet ne odide v svet k novi čebelji družini. Mi se poslavljamo in dodajamo zgolj še, da ste v podlagi lahko poslušali terenske posnetke, ki jih je v Čebeljem panju posnel glasbenik, improvizator, skladatelj in zvočni umetnik Patrick Farber. Povezavo do omenjene plošče pa bomo skupaj še kakšno objavili v razdelku Zeitgeist na naši spletni strani www.radiostudent.si. S čebelami in čebelarji sva se družila Janković in Polona.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, ne pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prem vrata, pa meniš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna eno žor.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to ti siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črni pa to ne, prav tista prava volk, ne. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiu Študent.